You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily podcast on the Minnesota Timberwolves, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, 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 ladies and gentlemen, to another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Towns is talking about weed. I'm not going to get into the moral grounds of if weed should be legalized or in what states players should be able to smoke the pot if it's legal in some states and not in others. But, Tim, is this a good look for the Timberwolves trying to reconstruct their team and gel as a roster to have this story going around that basically, I know he's arguing for the medical uses of marijuana, but basically the headlines I'm seeing now are Towns is arguing for weed. Is this the storyline you want for your team?
I don't think it matters. I really don't. I think, and if I recall, there was a coach either, I think it was Steve Kerr that was advocating for medical marijuana over the offseason or maybe at the end of last season. I don't think it's going to make any difference.
You don't think that we're going to get a huge supporting base out of Colorado now? You don't think it's going to boost the market for the Timberwolves?
I think they got the Nuggets pretty kind of monopolized that Colorado market already, but we'll see what happens. I don't know. The whole medical marijuana and the NBA storyline has never been huge on me, but I don't expect much to come out of this, frankly.
And we're not going to turn this into a political thing. I just thought we should bring it up because he is a Timberwolves player and a very central part of the team at that. But it is an interesting story. I saw it, give credit to where it's due. I saw this story on Bleacher Report, and then I saw it on SB Nation as well. So it's one of those stories circling around the Timberwolves organization and making the rounds in the media this morning. Thought we should bring it up. What I really want to talk about is the performance against the Jazz and how you think that plays into tonight's performance. They looked really good, especially shooting from downtown, the Wolves did. And I think that is an encouraging mark now, especially because they have San Antonio at home. I think it's something that we didn't see a ton of in the first game. Again, it was the first game of the season, so hard to take too much away from that. But I'm really, dare I say, confident in this team headed into a really tough game tonight with San Antonio to come into town. Where's your confidence level at after the team put on quite a show on the road against the Jazz the other night as far as how they'll perform against the Spurs?
They needed that win against Utah badly, especially after the loss in Phoenix. They really needed to close out that West Coast road trip with a win, and they did that. They looked good. Granted, the Jazz were without Rudy Gobert, the heart and soul of that team. They defended Ricky Rubio correctly. He shot, I think, 0-of-6 from deep. The only guy that really came out and performed well for them was Rodney Hood, especially in a second quarter stint off the bench. He was on his game, and he's been on his game against the Wolves in the past. But defensively, I think it was the Wolves' best effort. Offensively, Butler looked great. Jeff Teague looked great. Wiggins had some big fourth quarter buckets and played great defensive basketball. I thought that was the best defensive performance he's had this year. It was huge for them. Coming into this game, I just, like, literally just finished writing a preview for Zone Coverage about this game. It's a similar game to the opener in that both Leonard and Tony Parker are both out. But like you said, they're starting to play better basketball. They're getting more familiar with each other, and I'm really curious to see how big of a difference just that familiarity over these first few games is going to make for them. But my confidence level is higher than it was for the opener. The Spurs are still deadly as long as Greg Popovich is on the sideline. They still have LaMarcus Aldridge, Pau Gasol. They still have DeJounte Murray, who killed them last time. Patty Mills is still out there. So they're still a deep team, but I feel like their odds of winning are higher just off of however many games they've started the year. I'm blanking right now. What are they, 8-5, 13 games of sample size to really get them some familiarity.
Well, and that was the thing that I think going into the Spurs game, I know I personally, I think I underestimated both Murray and LaMarcus Aldridge were two guys that surprised me and have continued to surprise me over the course of the season. But now that you know a little bit what to expect, not all the way because Popovich has a player usually up his sleeve, but you know a little bit more what to expect about LaMarcus Aldridge. You know the defense of Murray is going to be there, and you've got to look out for him. But I think that especially when they're at home, they've gotten a little bit of a feel for this team playing them already. They know what they need to do. They've got a little bit of a feel for their own team. I feel like this is a matchup that the Timberwolves can take advantage of just because they have their full complement of starters and they have all of their guys together, you know? So I think that now after gelling for the last few weeks, they can take advantage of some of the matchups that were there in the first game that they just weren't able to capitalize on. I'm looking at this and I really feel like this is the game where you can spread the floor, and then I think Towns can have a solid game because this team is going to spread the ball around and spread the floor around on offense a little better than they did in that opening week. And I feel like Towns has shown us some things that he wasn't showing us early on, and maybe he can have a more even matchup against LaMarcus Aldridge and not get beat soundly like in the first week.
Yeah, the big thing that really killed the Wolves in that opener was offensive rebounding, or rather giving up offensive rebounds in that fourth quarter. The Wolves played like a small ball lineup. It was Teague, Jamal Crawford, Andrew Wiggins, Jimmy Butler, and Kat. And they countered that, or the Spurs countered that with Rudy Gay and LaMarcus Aldridge as their four and their five, which, I mean, Rudy Gay is not a power forward, but he still towers a little bit over Jimmy Butler, and they took advantage on the offensive glass. And yeah, LaMarcus Aldridge killed him, and he's been playing pretty good basketball. It's not like he has necessarily been playing completely up to his money a lot of the time, but especially lately, he really has. And he's just kind of historically had Towns' number in the past, so that's a matchup I'm really looking to see. But I'm not sure that just these last 13 games necessarily give the Wolves the answer how to stop Aldridge, but there are definitely adjustments they can make off of that first game to maybe play him better.
Yeah, and as far as LaMarcus Aldridge, I don't know. I'm not sure if he's – I think you're right. I don't think he's playing up to his money, but I do think there is a considerable difference from how he was playing the last couple months of last season to this season and just how aggressive he's been.
Oh, yeah. Just to be clear, I think he's mostly been playing up to that money that he was given, or at least like as close as he can. He's had a couple 30-point games. I think he's only hit under 20 points like twice all year. So he's doing his part in the Wolves. The Spurs are 9-5 without Leonard and Parker, and Aldridge is the main reason for that. So I don't want to make it sound like he's not playing up to his money, but I think just his general skill set doesn't lend itself to that kind of salary, in my opinion, for him. But he's been doing as much as he can to prove me wrong, and he's been playing really well lately.
He's out to prove all the haters wrong, I think, is what he's going for. But he has looked really good in the post, especially, and that's kind of been his place to really excel. But now that that Kawhi Leonard especially is out, they've run a lot more of the offense through him, and so he has looked really comfortable just playing a little bit more isolation ball in the post and really taking over the game. And the Spurs in general are a very solid team when you're playing half court basketball. One of the things going into this game, are you looking for them, or are you looking for the Timberwolves specifically to try and maybe up the tempo a little bit to keep them out of playing half court basketball with the Spurs? Or do you think that the way they've been shooting the ball, especially against the Jazz coming off a hot streak against the Jazz shooting three, you think they can play half court basketball and still be effective against the Spurs?
They're not, just with Tibbs, they haven't really been much of a fast break team. Pace of play has always been slow. I think they match up well enough to play. As long as the Wolves play their game, I think that's all that they need to do. If it means maybe running a bit more fast break, I mean, by all means, go for it. But I would probably anticipate that the fast break isn't going to be their main source of offense. When they tried that against the Warriors, granted, they were more playing the Warriors game, whereas the Spurs aren't that much of a fast break team. Their quick shots weren't terrible shots, but they clearly weren't comfortable with that style of play. So I think the half court is probably the right course of action here. Unless they've been practicing the fast break, which, I mean, go for it. I don't know what they've been preparing for, but just considering how they played this year and how they played towards the end of last year, my guess is that they're going to play more of a half-court offense.
And looking at this game, coming off of the Jazz, when you saw Teague take on a little bit, we were, I was talking with Dane yesterday about Teague take on a little bit of an offensive role. He didn't have that many assists. Butler was the one doing most of the facilitating, but Teague really went after Rubio, and maybe some of that, we speculated maybe some of that was him sticking it to Rubio a little bit and proving that trying to prove he's the better point guard. But some of that is just he was catching fire from outside as well. Do you want to see him try and slide back into more of a facilitator role? Or do you, if he's feeling it, do you just want to see him jack up shots and knock down three-pointers tonight? And if he's doing that, is one of the keys to this game, Butler really embodying the full facilitator role and going for double-digit assists again?
I mean, yeah, it all depends on Butler. So first of all, when it comes to Rubio, I want to give Teague some credit, but I also want to give, I think this was a game where Tibbs was able to smile leaving a little bit, because he was really hard on Rubio last year. Anytime there was a question about if Rubio had 17 and 12 assists, Thibodeau loved to talk about, well, Chris Dunn did this, this, and this. In this game, I want to give Teague credit, but I also want to mention that, like, if you listened really closely, when Ricky Rubio had the ball and was thinking about shooting, he would yell back up to Jeff Teague. He wanted Jeff Teague to go and get the rebound because he had no confidence in Rubio hitting those shots. So a lot of it, I think, is just Rubio being in his own head right now. We've seen that a million times here where his shot's just not falling. But offensively, Teague has to do whatever Jimmy Butler wants him to do, in my opinion. Like there are some nights where Jimmy Butler needs to go up and be the scorer. And that implies that Jeff Teague probably needs to be the facilitator and rack up the assists. In the Utah game, it was clear that Butler was going to be the facilitator. He had a double-double, 10 assists. Jeff Teague was catching and shooting and hitting. So it depends on the game, and it depends on whatever frame of mind or whatever the defense is really throwing at Butler. If he's going to go and start scoring, then I think Teague knows what to do. And it seems like thus far, especially late, that Teague has kind of picked up on that and is adapting pretty well. It's been a slow process, but he's slowly adapting.
Well, and that's one of the upsides. One of the things we were hoping that this team would transform into going into the preseason is that you could depend on a couple guys to go off and score a bunch of points, but it didn't necessarily have to be one or two set guys like last year. You needed Wiggins and Towns to have a big night every night. Now this year, you can have Teague have a big night and Butler have a big night, or you can have Wiggins wrap off 30 points and Towns have a really big night and Teague and Butler can just worry about facilitating. You don't have to have two guys specific to just a couple players scoring a bunch of points every night. There can be some ebb and flow to who has the hot hand, and it's going to be okay because not only are there a bunch of scorers on this team, but the offensive guys on the team can do a bunch of different things, which is the best version of this offense.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big reason why they wanted to bring Teague in was with Rubio, he had to be the primary ball handler to really make his mark. With Teague, you can run the offense through Wiggins, you can run the offense through Butler or Towns, and Teague is still there as a fourth option. And he's a pretty good fourth option. My favorite part about this last game against Utah was how, I mean, Wiggins was virtually invisible in the scoring column for most of the game, and then towards the end when it looked like the Jazz might make a small comeback, maybe even get it within single digits, Wiggins hit two or three shots in a row and virtually put the game away. Towns and Butler were kind of the main pieces. Antique were the main pieces in the first three and a half quarters even, but Wiggins is the one that really closed it out. I really like that, and that's exactly what I think Tibbs is looking for in offense. It's just a dynamic list of options, especially in that starting lineup. And we haven't even mentioned Taj Gibson, who's been cleaning up the glass, and he clearly has played with Jimmy Butler before, because anytime Butler gets stuck in the paint, like on a double team or whatever, Taj knows exactly where to get an easy lay-in. So you can tell they've played together. What I'm looking for in this game especially is how the bench is really going to do. They're the fifth worst bench in terms of scoring in the NBA. The Spurs are the fifth best. The Spurs can really turn it on even after their starters come out. The Wolves have had some serious troubles, especially with Crawford's scoring problems over these last few games. So I'm looking to see how they recover and how they do against one of the best benches in the NBA.
And we're going to get later on in the episode to the editor's choice, where Tim plucks out a storyline for the Wolves and a storyline from around the NBA that he's really paying attention to, he's drawing attention to, and that he wants you to check out. We'll get to that later. Going back to your point about the bench, do you expect Jamal Crawford to play more minutes? He had against the Jazz, he only had 12 minutes. Do you expect him to play a little more against the Spurs tonight, or do you think it'll be low numbers for most of the bench players again tonight?
I think it's looking more and more like the starters are going to get more and more minutes as long as the games are close, and I don't anticipate this game being a blowout either way, so I think the starters are going to get a lot of minutes. Crawford hasn't earned minutes, though, much lately. I think, and Dane and I talked about it a little bit on Wolves Wire the other day, I think I'm not as big on Crawford facilitating as much pick and roll as he has. He's a good passer, and he plays well with Gorgui Dieng. Granted, it was just reported that Gorgui probably isn't playing tonight.
And didn't play against the Jazz either.
He didn't play against the Jazz or the Suns. This will be his third straight missed game, assuming that he does miss it. But either way, Crawford hasn't really been able to find his shot lately. And when his shot isn't falling, I mean, the term chucker comes up, but he really does start to throw up some shots that are questionable. He shot an okay percentage and got to the line against Utah, so he was still a plus player in that sense. But I would really like to see Tyus Jones facilitate a little bit more than he is, or at least a little, try to half and half it out a little bit, because right now it feels like it's 80% Crawford, and that's just not something I'm big on.
Well, that's one of the things I've had the most problem with from Tyus Jones' game this season as well, is that he doesn't necessarily need to be scoring a ton of points for me, but usually when he's out there, the other game he had 10 minutes, usually when he's out there he's only getting one assist. I know part of that is if you throw it over to a guy, he's got to actually make the shot. But I do want to see him facilitate and take on that role where he's getting a few assists. If he's out there for 10 minutes, get two or three assists when he's out there. And when he's playing those bigger minutes, especially there's been times when he's played 17 minutes and only came away with one or two assists. I really do want to see Tyus Jones facilitate and look like he's running the offense more or less, and that would be just an encouraging thing off the bench for the Wolves to have. Bielitsa, what do you think his role is in this game? Do you think he has just not enough minutes to really play an impact of any kind, or do you think if he's knocking down some shots, he could have a little bit of a role in this game against the Spurs?
Well, first I want to touch on what you said about Tyus, because I don't think that's really fair to him. Like what I was saying was, he's not getting the ball to get those assists. He's more or less deferring to Crawford to play as primary ball handler and virtually playing shooting guard but rarely getting the ball. So in 10 minutes, he's probably playing two of those minutes, maybe one of those minutes as the actual point guard. So it's really hard for him to do anything, including rack up assists or whatever else you're really looking for him to get. So that's my problem with Tyus. It's not so much what he's doing, it's what he's able to do, or rather not able to do, given the offense that's being run for that second unit. As far as Bielitsa goes, yeah, I think he also needs to be utilized more in the offense. I've loved Dane Moore's idea about more or less just cutting Boz, giving some minutes to Bielitsa at the backup three. This is more realistic when Gorgui Dieng is healthy, but then running Gorgui at some four, at some five, running Taj at some four and some five, and then maybe even Cat at a little four. I think he just needs more minutes out there. I think he's his advanced stats or whatever, his plus-minus is overrating him a little bit, but I also think that he's clearly like a very serviceable to even a good bench player, maybe even a fringe starter. I don't want to overdo it, but his shooting and his ability to find passing lanes and to be a good team defender, I think, isn't being utilized properly. And I think there are ways to do that.
Well, Dane, too, brought up the point that they're probably not going to give him any starts as long as Taj is playing the way he is on defense and Bielitsa's not as good of a defender.
Oh, no, I don't want to start him. I definitely don't want to start him, but like the idea of playing more.
Well, obviously not tonight, but maybe sometime in the future. my speculation was at some point in the distant future, if Wiggins and Towns are coming along on defense, there would be a place for maybe Bielitsa to grab a couple starts, because then he's not one of many defensive liabilities. Excuse me. One of a couple defensive liabilities. He's the one defensive liability out there. And that's the way he finds a role as a starter. It may be sometime in the future, but
I don't know, man. I like, if there's anyone that's been consistently good on defense, it's Taj Gibson. And like, I see what you're saying, but you can't demote a guy that's been as consistent as Taj Gibson has been. He's earned. Jace Frederick wrote a great piece about how Taj has earned basically every penny for the style he's played this year. And like, I like the idea of if Bielitsa is playing well, and if the two youngsters, Wiggins and Towns, are playing good defense, then you can sacrifice a lesser defender in Bielitsa in the starting lineup and stretch the floor. But you can't demote Taj Gibson for that. And I mean, let's say Wiggins and Towns are playing good defense, then you have Jimmy Butler and Taj Gibson in the starting lineup. I mean, that's a pretty formidable defensive starting lineup in that scenario. I don't know why you'd want to mess with that.
I guess the one reason would be, and maybe it's not starting, maybe it's just giving him closer to 20, 25 minutes as opposed to more like 13, 15 minutes. But just to get, if Wiggins and Towns are coming along as defenders, then having Bielitsa play heavier minutes to get his shooting in there, as long as he stays consistent and becomes even more consistent of a shooter, then that would be a possibility to play with. But again, that's definitely not a problem that's happening tonight. That's down the road a ways.
Yeah. I am totally for giving Bielitsa more minutes right now. It's just the idea of starting him was, I wasn't big on that. But giving him a bit more minutes, I'm for doing that right now.
I'm glad that we can find an area we can both agree on. That's really the important part here.
Good for us.
Alrighty, we're going to keep talking about Spurs versus Timberwolves. But first, I wanted to tell everybody about my favorite app, Draft. So if you love fantasy basketball, then you need to try my new favorite app, the Draft app, or you can go on draft.com if you're not an app person. If you want to do it from your laptop, go to draft.com. It's daily fantasy basketball, but not like the other guys. Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management. Just set it and forget it. And if there's anything I love, it's setting things and forgetting them, because I've got a crazy schedule. I can't remember anything. So that's really important, especially if you're in night class. For me, I don't know how many people that applies to, but it's a good thing to have. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft can even take care of last minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part, play for cold hard cash. Draft starts from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. No salary caps. Play in real life snake draft, just like you play with your friends in a season long league. Come and join me today on Draft. I'm going to be setting up leagues for all my Locked On Timberwolves listeners. If you get into the Draft app and use the promo code TWolves, that's TWolves all caps, then you can get into my draft lobbies, play me. I'll have drafts for money and for free. So if you want to just try it out, don't want to play for cash, don't want to risk any money quite yet, we'll have something for you as well. Or you can play and take my money. Prove to me how much more you know about basketball than I do by drafting a better lineup than I do. Join Draft today and take some money from me and enjoy having a team that you only have to worry about for one night. Alrighty, so back to the Spurs. If you, I'm going to put you a little bit on the spot here, Tim. If you are looking at this matchup, where are a couple areas, who are a couple players that can really make some hay for the Timberwolves? Who are a couple guys you expect to have a really good night? And I don't want to hear Jimmy Butler. I'm taking that one away for you. I think he's going to have good nights every single night the way that he is in what he means for the team. I think he's set up to have great nights all the time. Who outside of him is somebody who can really have a great night tonight against the Spurs?
Ooh, man, you took my guy. let's see. I think that Andrew Wiggins can have a good game. Is that an unfair one too, Andrew Wiggins?
No, I like that one.
Okay, I think Andrew Wiggins can have a big game. There's not really a rim protector, quote-unquote, on this team. I know LaMarcus Aldridge is a good shot blocker. He's not a great shot blocker. And, I mean, I believe Kyle Anderson will be matched up against him most likely, and while he's an okay defender, I don't think that he's the type of guy that's really going to be able to stop Andrew Wiggins. Whoa, hold on. Ooh, can you tell him? Could you hear that?
No, I could not.
Oh, well, now I just seem like a crazy person. My microphone, it works really well. I was checking a game log, and a highlight reel started playing, and it was really loud. Anyway.
No, you're just a crazy person. That wasn't real.
Yeah, I'm losing my mind. Andrew Wiggins. I think that just the way he's been able to find his way into the lane lately has been really impressive, and this is the type of team that I think could be really susceptible to that type of play. If he can really get that passing down and be really sharp about it and consistent about it, I think he can be one of those nights where he's both scoring in the paint and then also dishing out to the corners, people like Gibson or Towns or whoever's out on the perimeter at the time. It seems like a type of game where he can really take over.
Well, I like this pick too, because this is a game after, because the Jazz game, he had some really solid defensive play, and this is a game where you can back that up with another defensive performance and kind of show that this is more of a trend, as opposed to every once in a while you have a really good defensive night, getting some steals, getting some blocks, playing his man extra tight and kind of taking a cue from Murray and sticking with a guy and not giving up on a play. I think this is another night to build off of the production he had against the Jazz.
Yeah, totally. I mean, my only issue with him defensively was it wasn't a consistent effort. It was like when it was at its best, I think it was the best that I've seen him play defense like in his career, maybe. Real small sample size, but I mean, he was chasing down people on the fast break for blocks. He was getting steals in transition. He was getting half-court blocks. Like, he did a little bit of everything. It was really nice to see. And he was staying with his man. He was playing better team defense. But then there were still those lapses that you're going to get from a young guy. So I'd really like to see him make a more complete defensive performance. If he can do that, I mean, that's a great sign going forward.
And then I want to turn to quickly Butler. Murray's going to be on Butler, right?
DeJounte Murray?
Yes. Do you think he'll be the one
starting anymore? They switched him out a few games ago. It's Patty Mills as the starting point guard. I assume Danny Green will be on Butler and Kyle Anderson will be on Wiggins, and then Mills will be on Teague. That's my guess.
I guess my assumption is that Murray will be playing a pretty good chunk of minutes, and when he's out there, he'll be on Butler. Do you think, or maybe not? Because that would be interesting too. Just because Murray has shown a pretty tenacious side on the defense. I know he's had the last couple games, there's been a couple problems on his defense, but when he's really playing great defense, he is very consistent, and he doesn't give up on plays, and he stays with players. And he could maybe be a problem just as far as getting in the way of passing lanes for Butler. Do you think that'll be a problem, or do you think Butler will be just fine no matter who's defending him?
I think Butler is close to being one of those guys where it doesn't really matter who's guarding him. I mean, Murray's a good defensive player, and it'll depend on matchups and who else is on the floor with him to decide if he's going to be guarding Butler or not. He plays point guard for him, so, I mean, I know he's a good defensive player. So it'll depend on they might decide to hide Manu Ginobili on Teague, which could be another matchup that the Wolves could exploit, especially considering how well he played against Utah. Yeah, I'm not sure Murray's quite at that level where he can really shut down Butler. He can definitely give Butler problems. Like, Donovan Mitchell was giving Butler problems against Utah. He looked fantastic. I'm not sure I'm really sold on the idea that Murray's going to be able to shut him down by any stretch, which I know you're not saying that, but give him problems? Sure, I could see that.
Alrighty, so I wanted to get to editor's choice here, but first, just any predictions for the Timberwolves? Do you think they can eke out a win here? I know it'll be I'm anticipating a pretty tight game, especially down into the closing minutes, although I was looking clutch stats that the NBA stats page has. The Wolves are second in the league, and they do a really good job eking out wins, especially late in fourth quarters. Do you think that at home, that kind of edge is going to be something you see play out here for them, and they can grab a win?
I hate giving predictions, like win-loss predictions. But, yeah, I think they can win. Like, I think I said this when we last podcasted last week, and I don't even remember what team we were talking about.
The Warriors.
Yeah, I think it was about the Warriors. Yeah, yep. It was about the Warriors. They can beat the Spurs, and they might even be favored in this game a little bit just because they're at home and they're more healthy. But I'm never going to bet against the Spurs, even, like, in the metaphorical sense. It's really... I mean, they're just an incredible team. They're perfectly coached team, as close to perfectly coached as you can get. But as far as predictions go, no, I just don't feel comfortable fully making one. But yeah, they can definitely win this game.
All right, you know what? I'm a step up to the plate. Don't worry about this. I'm a step up to the plate and
I know
hit,
you are.
Hit it. I'm gonna. I'm calling a very tight Timberwolves victory, 105-102. They're gonna just squeak this game out.
You're calling the score and everything, huh? That's impressive.
Oh yeah. This is what I do. I roll the dice constantly. I'm always at the roulette table. I'm always spinning a dial, rolling the dice, and picking a score, rolling with the team. So that's just what I do. That's my move. We're going to move on to editor's choice. Exactly. What are two storylines? First, a storyline from the Wolves that people should turn their eye to, and a storyline from around the NBA that people should take a look at.
All right. So the local spin, I am interested to see, and I already talked about it a little, but I'm interested to see how the bench recovers. I don't think they've played very good basketball. I wonder how missing Gorgie Jang factors into that. I think it makes a little bit of a difference. But Crawford hasn't been great. I'm not sure I like the dynamic between Crawford, Tyus, and Bielitsa. I'd like to see Tyus and Bielitsa get a little bit more run just with the ball in their hands. That's not to say I don't want Crawford with the ball in his hands at all, because I think he does a lot of good things. He keeps the offense moving, and that's important, because I'm not sure Tyus or Bielitsa do that in the same fashion. But I'm just curious, because I think the starters have kind of figured themselves out, and I think that's a big part of the reason why they're kind of quote-unquote hockey subbing early on, was just to give the starters that kind of familiarity. But I want to see the bench get to that point at some point, too, and I don't think Tibbs has quite figured out how he wants to run that bench unit together. So I want to see if there are any changes going with that this evening. As far as my bigger NBA one, it's a little different this week, because it's not necessarily an NBA story, so to speak. Colton, can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
How old are you?
I'm 22. Just 22. I'm a fresh 22.
You're a fresh 22. Oh. You're a young whippersnapper. You're my adopted son, all of those things. So the one thing I think I haven't told you is had you sit down and watch is a little movie called Space Jam, which just turned 21 years old today. So you were a year old when Space Jam came out, which is just outstanding. But that movie, it didn't shape the way I watch basketball by any stretch, but I don't think I've seen a basketball movie more than Space Jam. When I was a kid, my brother and I could literally quote that movie from beginning to end, and it's weird to think that if that movie were a person right now, it could legally drink. Zach Lowe wrote a really great, like, nerdy why Space Jam is unrealistic article that I only started reading, and as good as it was, I couldn't finish it because it hurt me too much. I'm going to watch Space Jam when I get home from Timberwolves Spurs tonight. Second NBA storyline. I don't know if that's really what you were looking for, but that's what I got.
That is fantastic. I want to know, do you have one of the Space Jam jerseys?
I do not. I can one up that, though. I have a Space Jam quilt from a bedding that I had from when I was a kid that I still have at my apartment.
That is awesome. I love it. That is a great non-Timberwolves storyline to follow, and a little peek into the making of Tim Fakeless,
which I know all the listeners are looking for.
Obviously, that's what they come to the Locked On Wolves podcast for, is that in-depth deep dive content. I can't wait for
zone coverage cribs. You can see my cheap ass apartment. It would be great.
Oh, we got it. We've got to do that sometime. Oh, that'd be awesome. All right. So you have the story that came out just fresh, hot off the presses. Are you doing the recap tonight as well?
Yes, I do basically every home game, and then I try to spread it out amongst the Wolves writing core for the away games. But yeah, I will be at the game doing the recap. I already have the preview up on zonecoverage.com. So yeah, that's what I got.
Fantastic. I assumed as much. So definitely go check out the preview on zonecoverage.com and stay tuned later on. If you miss the game, if you have something going on, if you've got a dinner or you got work late, then you have the recap as well from Tim going up on Zone Coverage later tonight. Check both of those out. Also, if you're looking for stuff to watch over the weekend, I have my top 10 things to watch for in the NBA, some storylines as well in there that you can look for. Look out for that on Zone Coverage as well. And just go to the site because we have some amazing writers there, from Timberwolves to baseball to hockey to college pro. All the writers are really great. Check that out for sure. Tim, thanks for joining us. This has been another Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast.